Hi, I'm Kathy Forstey, music director at KC Cafe Radio. It's a great pleasure to chat with an old friend of KC Cafe Radio, Michael Gaither. We have been playing Michael's music on KC Cafe Radio for several years and airing his podcast, Songs and Stories, for nearly 8 years. Michael's own music is best described as rootsy Americana. His newest CD, Hey Karma, covers such topics as zombies, mixtapes, angels, and corporate speak. Backed by banjos, guitars, mandolins, accordion, and pedal steel, Hey Karma is a fun listen with a good mix of nostalgia, sarcasm, and attitude. Michael Gaither, thank you for talking to me on KC Cafe Radio today.
Thanks, Kathy. It's nice to actually talk in person. We've been doing the email thing for, I guess, in about 8 years.
Yeah, it's been quite a while.
Yeah, you know, and KC Cafe has been really, really good to me, so I really appreciate all the support with the podcast and the music and what you do for everybody.
Back at ya. You kind of do several things that we do in common, so it's been nice to be supportive of independent artists, and it's sort of what we're all about and what you're all about as well. So were you raised in California, and do you still live out there?
Yeah, you know, I still live in the same town I was born in. My wife and I both are on the West Coast. We're in the Monterey Bay, so we're about an hour and a half south of San Francisco. We're about half an hour north of Monterey. The closest probably known city is Santa Cruz. And yeah, I've been here my whole life.
So did you have any of the fires in that?
You know, they missed us this year. They've come around us. I think about 8 years ago, there was one, I'm pointing if you're watching on the radio, pointing over the ridge about a mile away. That one got close. That was about 8 years ago. The ones this last summer didn't, but the smoke got down here. It was pretty bad.
It looked awful.
We've been fortunate right here, but around California, and it's sort of a, you know, every region has their own kind of Mother Nature weather kind of problems, cold or hot. And it seems like here, if we get a really good winter, we get a lot of green, and then we get a lot of dry in the summer. And now we're really not getting a lot of rain, so we'll get more dry in the summer. So you kind of can't win. So you just get your go bag ready and hope it doesn't hit you.
So being raised in that part of California, it's pretty ripe with great songwriters and musicians. Did that influence you to want to be a songwriter?
It kind of did. I mean, around here, you really can't, you know, throw a rock without hitting a songwriter or a guitar player, it seems like, but I'm exaggerating, of course. I think for me, I always liked, and I'm kind of a late bloomer, I always liked songwriters. Even back when I was a kid buying records, I would read the liner notes and see who wrote what and, you know, where these people come from. And kind of called K-Pig, offshoot of K-Pig, they were kind of where a lot of the Americana genre came out of. And when they plopped here about 30 years ago, I started listening, and I'm an old punk. I listened to the Ramones and the Clash when I was growing up, and country music was something my parents listened to. That's kind of where that was always sort of my stance. And then I discovered this with this local station and just people coming through the area and playing, I found this sort of folk singer songwriter Americana kind of country influence, but not really country kind of genre. And you know, I went back to the songwriters and the lyrics and the stories, and I really liked that stuff and songs that told the story. And I got in my 30s, and I thought, you know, I should be able to play three chords and just play some of these songs. That's what I did. And then before that, I did stand-up, so I was used to being in front of people. And I started playing cover tunes, and of course, you know what happens, you start playing cover tunes, and you think, well, maybe I could write a song. Mm-hmm. And I did. I just kind of dove into it and kind of tried to make up for lost time because I started so late, and I've done 5 records and, you know, got some radio play, and just it's fun. And we were talking about supporting other artists. I think as much fun as it is doing music and writing songs and somehow being able to write songs, which I'm really grateful for, just the people that we've met doing music is like, that's the real benefit. There's so many amazing people that we've crossed paths with and made friends with. So you want to support them. And it's just been a very, very cool thing to dive into the last 15 or so years.
Now, you started out as a journalist, correct? Is that what you have a degree in?
And my degree is actually in broadcasting.
Okay.
And I've always kind of had a corporate day job. But I was a part-time writer for the local Santa Cruz Sentinel for over 10 years. I was a media writer. So I did video reviews and movie reviews, and then started interviewing musicians. I interviewed Carrie Kane and Darryl Williams and Lucy Kaplansky, and I was huge fans. And so that was really fun. So I did that for 10 years. And then that kind of trailed off. They stopped using stringers. And about the time my work with the Sentinel trailed off, I started writing songs. So the timing was actually really good. And I just kind of dove into songwriting and took over a local open mic that was kind of, that needed somebody to kind of run it, and did that for 9 years. And that kind of got me out to playing and learning how to promote an event, and again, meeting more people. If you're trying to start doing music, the best thing to do is find a place and start an open mic. Mm-hmm. You'll meet everybody, or at least go to open mics and meet. So journalism was about 10 years as a part-time thing, but really I did a lot of work for them, and it was really, really fun. And then kind of veered into like running open mics and doing events and songwriting and doing my own stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you also did stand-up comedy for a while as well.
I did. That kind of predates the Sentinel. When I was a kid, I was really super shy. And I got into college and I thought, what could I never see myself doing? Because I was still really, really shy. Wasn't comfortable, you know, talking in front of people and that kind of, you know, because you're young and that kind of happens. And so I went to a local, it was sort of a music poetry open mic, and I just started writing jokes, and I became their MC for about a year and did a few little things here and there and played some small clubs and realized that, you know, I wasn't really good, but I had about a half hour of polished material, and it really kind of got me out of my shell and got me into writing on a regular basis. I still always carry a notepad with me, and that was an offshoot of doing stand-up. And then when I was doing journalism, and now obviously with songwriting, I'm always writing everything down. So it was a good thing to throw myself into to kind of just get me moving a little bit.
What kind of comedian were you?
It was pretty much the generic observational stuff that you kind of see now. Yeah. Clean, a lot of stories, a lot of pop culture references, which kind of fits into my music too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why now when I get up and do, if I play a place that's noisy, it doesn't faze me, because if you've done stand up 2 o'clock in the morning to a bunch of drunks, you're pretty much thick skinned. Nothing really fazes you. So yeah, it was just kind of generic observational humor.
Can you point at a particular event or a particular gig that you were at that made you say, hey, I think I want to do music now?
Yeah, this is, hope it doesn't sound cliche. Yeah, absolutely. I was at this local station, had these things called Fat Fries. They were outdoor festivals for a whole weekend. And this is when I was really getting into people like Robert Earl Keane and the Austin Lounge Lizards and Jimmy Dale Gilmore and all the guys from Texas with three names, that kind of thing. And really getting into those writers. And a bunch of them were playing this outdoor festival. And I remember I was watching Robert Earl Keane. He was probably doing like Corpus Christi Bay or some kind of, you know, standard of his. And I was watching him, and I didn't play guitar yet, but I knew the songs. I was already kind of writing lyrics or just still writing for the Sentinel. So I was always writing something. And I was watching Robert Keane play. And I looked up and I said, I don't know music or how to play, but this kind of sounds like maybe it's three chords. I mean, I didn't play any, I had no music instruction whatsoever. I really didn't know what was going on with the guitar, but I thought, this kind of seems like it's three chords. I could probably do this. So I had a friend who was a player and taught a little bit, and I said, can you teach me a few chords? And he said, sure. So I brought some Neil Young. He goes, find a few songs you like. So I found a couple of Robert Keane songs, and I found a couple of Neil Young songs, and my friend Hawk just started teaching me how to play. And what went along with that, which was nice, is I never sang. And Hawk told me, he said, if you're going to play guitar, you have to sing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but I can't sing, right? And he goes, everybody can sing, and you have to sing if I'm going to teach you. And I went, okay. That was the hardest. What I learned, and you probably do this as students too, and I tell people who are learning, I said, even if you think you can't sing, sing, because not only should you, it involves your whole body, rhythmically, everything. Just playing guitar by itself, you're not really going to learn the songs unless you at least try to sing them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the path I took.
Yeah, and that's,
and then
really,
open mic, yeah,
that's really what guitar is made for. it's a portable instrument.
Unless you have a lead. Yeah, yeah, it's an accompanying instrument.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do your other family members play music, or how was music involved in your growing up in your life?
You know, it really wasn't. I was an only child, and my parents didn't play. And my cousins my age, nobody played. It really wasn't. You know, this was kind of the anomaly. It was never played at family gatherings, ever, ever, ever. But for some reason, I just veered towards, you know, liking songwriters and lyricists, and just always kind of gravitated towards that. But for some reason, it just clicked with me. I really don't know why. Maybe because I was an only child and I had a lot of free time. I don't know.
So your friends were the music you listened to, maybe, you know?
Yeah, that is a big part of it. Yeah, I always liked in my demographic when I was growing up, you know, like I mentioned the Ramones and the Clash and, you know, of course, AC/DC. That was kind of what was big out here. I remember one of the first records I bought was, it was a dumb title. Rick Derringer had an album called If I Weren't So Romantic, I'd Shoot You. And it was a Rick Derringer record. It was fun. And I never, this is another kind of something that I never forgot. I was going through the lyrics, and the title track was written by Rick Derringer, Bernie Taupin, and Alice Cooper. I went, that's a weird combination. And on that same record, there was a song called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. There's a Rick Derringer version. Derringer's a great version of it. In fact, he actually does the clean radio version that I actually took the lyrics on for my new record. And I was looking at the song like, what a weird, cool song. And then I looked and then it was written by some guy named Warren Zevon. I'm like, well, who's Warren Zevon? And of course, I went down that whole path. So a lot of those early 70s writers, especially because Zevon was just, he could be sarcastic and sentimental in the same song, and sometimes you weren't really quite sure which way it was going. And he's a huge influence. I'm just a manic Warren Zevon fan. I've recorded a couple of his songs. So that was a little moment, too, when I went, who's this Warren Zevon? And I discovered all this stuff he wrote that was just amazing.
Yeah.
I look for people like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think, like, I often wonder about kids today and listening to music and, you know, and we come from an era where we could read liner notes and look at liner notes, and even if it wasn't an artist that, you know, like you were just mentioning, you know, you saw the writer of the song and that got you into finding out who Warren Zevon is. I mean, I did the same thing. I would read liner notes like they were the Bible, you know, and I would discover these artists and the musicians and things. And I still remember names to this day from albums, liner notes I read in the 70s. And,
well, I just rattle off names too. Same thing. Yeah.
And kids today don't get liner notes. They don't read liner notes. They just hear a song. I mean, I just kind of feel bad for kids today and not being able to discover things like that. You know.
I know you're missing a whole piece. I know. Like here it. I'm working at home today where I've been using everything else, but we just redid our home office and I'm making room for a record player so I can get my records back out and pull those things out again. Yeah, and as far as, you know, the kids these days, there's a great phrase. I'm kind of an aspiring old fart, but I think, so I hate to go, you kids don't know how good we had it. But, you know, even now, we're in the age of Spotify where you want to hear a song, you pop it onto your phone and you listen to it. And that's kind of it. I mean, you know, in our generation, we would actually take the record. Even the early days of CDs, they had the full, you had to like use glasses to read everything, but I think that's missing. I think there's probably like a lot of subcultures of kids who are really into who's making the music, but I think for the most part, it's just kind of consumable, you know, and they're missing
away.
Out on.
Yeah.
And I hate to be like an old fart, but that really is kind of what's happened.
Yeah.
And it's been kind of devalued too. I mean, those of us that record and, you know, somebody told me, why don't you, instead of pressing CDs, why don't you just put them online and sell them online that way? And I think, what they don't realize is like the real cost of doing music is in the production, and the delivery method is kind of like, you know, that's sort of that's easy. So I think kids are missing a whole big piece of what goes into music and how to, what you appreciate and enjoy when you actually, you know, listen to it, knowing what went into it and who wrote what and who did what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd be back in sounding like an old fogey now, but back in my day, you know, I mean, music was much more purposeful, you know. You would go out and you'd hear something on the radio and you would actually go buy it and bring it home and you'd take it out of the package and put it on a record player to listen to it. You'd had to take the time to listen to it. Where nowadays you just pull up your phone and go, oh, this is a song, you know, and you listen to 30 seconds of it. Okay, yeah, I don't like that or whatever. You know, that's...
Yeah, there's a... I still have my old Lenny Bruce albums. I was out with the Comedy Junkie too, and I remember there was a bit he did about heroin. But Lenny Bruce talking about heroin, what he liked the most about it was the ritual of what they had to go through to prep it. Not where I'm going with this, but with music and records, you had to go to the store, you had to look for the record, you had, oh, I've heard this song. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And you would take it home, and you would take it out of the sleeve, you'd put it on the turntable, you'd probably dust it off. And that whole piece is missing, and I think that buildup of having to like get ready to listen to the song, that was fun. That was really fun.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to getting a record player again so I can do that again. I'm looking behind me for, you know, for the record player's going to go. Yeah, that piece is all missing.
I agree. So you said you listen to like a lot of heavy rock kind of things, Ramones and punk rock stuff. What point did you like discover singer-songwriters?
You know, it was kind of, you know, it was about the same time. I think with the early punk, probably Joe Strummer in The Clash. I mean, that was a whole level above what was going on because he was such a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
And those lyrics, he was such a great lyricist. So that probably started it. And then about the same time, another band that I loved was The Kinks. The Kinks they kind of had their kind of second resurgence in, like in the late 70s with Low Budget and Misfits and Give the People What They Want. That's kind of when I saw them a couple times and they were still touring as The Kinks. And so I discovered Ray Davies. So it was, people knew The Kinks, but I'm like, yeah, but it's Ray Davies. He wrote all these songs and a few written by Dave Davis. So It was about, so it was kind of an offshoot, the bands that were popular. And then I found who was writing the songs, and Ray Davies is still a big influence. He's a genius as well.
Yeah.
Him and Zevon Bull.
He's so overlooked as a songwriter. He's one of my favorites. One of my students brought in a Kinks song to learn, and it was, you know, usually you think it's, you know, one of the more common ones, you know, like, but she brought in Waterloo Sunset to learn. And I'm like, where did you hear that song? And she goes, I saw it. It was in the credits of a movie and I liked it. And I'm like, well, that's so cool. You know, it's like, it's so
that
good.
It's fun to
show those kids those songs.
Yeah. You know, that is one of the greatest songs ever written. That's such a beautiful, beautiful song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that song. So I was excited to teach that student that song.
It's encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. She's brought in a couple of cool songs for me to teach her. So you said that you started on guitar first. What was your first guitar?
Oh, it was this old, you know, when I was a kid, my parents got me a guitar and it just never stuck. I think it was some off, weird, goofy brand. Even after I started playing, I realized the guitar was kind of unplayable. Maybe that's one. It was some weird, they got it from the local music store. When I was in my 30s and I was playing, I got this thing out and it wouldn't stay in tune. The fretboard was like way too big for my hands even as an adult. And I'm like, well, maybe this is one reason why I didn't play as a kid. So I had that. I borrowed my brother-in-law's like nylon string guitar to learn some chords. And I decided it was time for a guitar. So I found an old Yamaha that was a drummer had it, didn't play it, and I got it for $150. And it's one of those mid-70s dreadnought Yamahas. It's a great guitar. So it's kind of in the closet now. So that's one that I really started playing a lot and started writing songs on. And then I kind of graduated to a couple others. I had a Factory Martin for several years. It was one of those, I don't mean to diss Martin, they're great guitars, but it was one of those factory guitars that just didn't have it, so I sold that. And 2 years ago, I graduated to a Santa Cruz Guitar Company guitar. They're made locally, and they're just, it's like the best guitar I've ever played. And I have a lot of friends who are, you know, we all do, who are collect guitars, and I always say, I bought my last guitar. My friends will say, no way, man, you gotta have, what'd you get? I tell them what I got, and they go, oh, I can see that. That's a good.
Yeah, I mean, working at a music store, I tell people, you know, it's not a matter of what you need, it's what you want. It's with guitar playing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right.
If you're a real guitar player, you have several guitars. Talking about songwriting a little bit here. So, when you write a song, do you write every day? Or are you one of those purposeful kind of writers that say, I have to write every day? Or do you just kind of write when the muse kind of speaks to you?
I think just because I used to write every day. Because I was like, I was trying to like, and I, when I first started running, I wrote a bunch of songs. Of course, I don't play hardly any of them now, but some stuff. Lately, it's because I'm busy with, you know, a day job and then booking shows and everything. I kind of write when I get a really good idea. I try to write, I still with my phone and my notepad, I write every idea down that comes along because if you don't write these down, they go away. You have to write them down when they come to you. But I don't sit and write songs every day. When I get a really good idea, I'll start banging on it every chance I get. That's kind of where I'm at these days. And what I do a lot of, and I think this probably shows on the new record because it's so weirdly specific to the subject matter, I'll sit down and think, I need to write a song about fill in the blank. And I'll just have that idea. And then when I finally, you know, get the muse to strike, then I kind of just run with it.
Do you ever write from a title, like a title comes to you and you think, I need to write a song with this title?
That's what I tend to do that actually quite a bit. When I was actually practicing with a bass player last night and he's trying to start writing and he said, you know, I've written a bunch of titles. I have probably like 20 pages of just titles. And I said, that's kind of where you start. For me, some of my best songs start, quote unquote, best songs, start with titles. The title track, Hey Karma, from the new record, started with that title. My Highway 17 song, which is kind of a hit local. Highway 17 is this windy road that connects Silicon Valley to Santa Cruz, and it's kind of an insane drive. And that started with just a title. If I have a title that really, really sticks with me that I know I want to write about, I'll probably write the chorus first, unless I have the story. But I kind of come at it from a couple of different angles.
Is there a song that's taken you like several years to write, or do they usually come fairly quickly?
No, they're usually a lot of work. I'm looking at my new record. You know, I think on my last record, I had the last record I did was called Starlight Drive-In. I knew I wanted to write a song about the local drive-in, and a lot of what I do kind of harkens back to being, again, kind of like a tail end of the boomer, so that I kind of like to write about the nostalgia piece. So I knew I wanted to write a song about the Starlight, and it was a common drive-in name, and I thought Starlight Drive-In, Saturday night, and a song, to me, it sounds a little facetious because you're not doing it constantly, but wrote it, and it was kind of folky, strummy, and I went, no. And then I had a version that had all the drive-in movie titles in it. I'm like, no, that doesn't work. And then I came back to it a couple of years later and kind of really whittled it down. And then finally one day I thought, it just needs to be finger-picked. And that's kind of what I ended up with, and that's what kind of worked. Mm-hmm. So that one really took several, it took a bunch of iterations over several years to really get it where I thought it was going to work. Mm-hmm. And in fact, on the new record too, I had that Red Skeleton song I was talking about earlier, and that's when I wrote that when I was first writing songs. And I really did meet Red Skeleton. He was my hero when I was a kid, and he was like incredibly sweet and funny. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a song about it, and I think I strummed it, and it had a lot of verses, and people liked it. But I kept thinking, it's too specific, and it's just way too long. And so I stopped playing it. My wife one day said, how come you don't play that Red Skeleton song anymore? I go, it wasn't that good. She goes, yeah, it was. And so I took it out, and I basically, like, cut out the last verse, shortened the bridge, and started playing it a couple of times, and people, you know, my age remember the Red Skeleton. So I took that, and that's the one where I just moved it to the ukulele because it didn't need a lot of support musically. And, you know, so that's one that just, I wrote it, and it probably sat for a good 5 to 7 years, and I came back to it, and I'm like, oh, I forgot about this song. Let me fix it. Mm-hmm. But some do that.
Yeah.
Some like, I mean, I don't mean to be promoting the record, but we're talking the zombie song on the new record. I really did. I went to a songwriter retreat in Idaho with a friend of mine. We kind of traveled together, and we got to Boise, and he said, this is a really nice, quiet place. It'd be kind of cool to maybe, because he said, everybody here is really friendly. I feel like we're all gathering up in the mountains after some horrible disaster, because it was kind of a mellow Sunday. And I said, yeah, like the zombie apocalypse. So we set up that night, and in one night we wrote "Moving to Boise, Zombie Free." So that we cool. just like busted it out like in a couple hours. So you never know. You never know. Some do. Some come quick, and some you just kind of like you got to be patient, put them aside, and come back to them. I always have a couple of things in the works. Like now, I have two songs that I really want to finish, but they're kind of started. I have a chorus, but they're just not there yet. Mm-hmm. You know, and the hard thing is just you gotta be patient and know at some point if it's a good song you'll finish it.
Right. You just mentioned co-writing. So when you co-write, is it usually 50-50 on lyrics and music with the co-writer, or how does that usually work for you with a co-write?
It's always different. Sometimes, like with the zombie song, Bill and I were in the same room together. We just sat and just wrote it together and bounced lyrics back and forth. Sometimes, most of the time, I've written with a couple of other people. Most of the time, I'll get a chorus and maybe a verse or two, and I kind of get stuck either like with the story of the song, or maybe musically it's just not very interesting. And I have a couple of friends where I'll just, you want to make a, and I'll just bounce it to them. And we'll probably, I have one guy back in Nashville, my friend John, John Cirillo, who actually co-wrote Hey Karma with me. We actually wrote it over Skype. And he's really good melodically, and he's got more of a Nashville style. That's kind of what he's doing. So we come from different places. So I'll just give him as much stuff as I have, and he'll either, if it needs more lyrics, he'll do that. If it needs to be tweaked musically, he'll do that. And then locally, I have a friend named Steve Kritzer. It's kind of half and half with me, and we'll kind of like bounce it back and forth over email, text, and phone.
Mm-hmm.
So it really varies depending on, usually it's me starting a song and going, man, this is probably better as a co-write. It needs a different perspective. And so it really depends on the song, but I'll just give them as much as I have, and then we'll talk about it, and then we'll just bounce it back and forth.
Mm-hmm. So like on the song Hey Karma, how did you come up with that title, and what made you like say, I think I need to have him co-write this with me?
I was kind of stuck with it. I was talking to somebody else on the radio, and they said, well, in Hey Karma, you talk about cutting the brakes on your aunt's car. Talk about your aunt. And I said, well, you know, if any of you haven't heard the song, Hey Karma is about me basically telling karma, there's a lot of people that have built up bad karma, falling behind, I'm here to help. It's kind of that's the joke of the song, is like, there's some nasty people I'd like to help you kind of punish. That's kind of like how the song works. And I told this guy, I said, well, it was based on real people, but I certainly was not going to use them in the song. So let's just call the whole thing fictional. let's pretend that none of this happened. And I just, so for that, the idea was that, I think the hook in that song was, hey, karma, you help people get their due. The bad ones slip right through. That's why I called. I'm here to help is basically that was the angle. And I had a bunch of detail, and I didn't really have it structured yet. So I gave it to John, and we came up with it's a song where there's not really a repeating chorus, but the title, I do this a lot, there's not really a repeating chorus, but the title repeats all the way through, so you know what the song is called. Mm-hmm. And I think for this one, I just had a bunch of detail and a bunch of verse snippets, and I knew where it was going to end, so John kind of helped me kind of like structure it.
Yeah, it's a great song, and we play it on Casey Cafe Radio too, so...
It's kind of like a quote-unquote hit. I mean, wherever I'm at, that's the one that's gotten the most airplay kind of everywhere. Like, I think I hit something with that.
Yeah, know? It's a great title. It's just a great title. It's memorable as well. And then another one that I like a lot that goes a little bit away from Hey Karma is Little Angels Everywhere. Can you tell me about that song?
Yeah, that was a written in an afternoon song. I love that song. Goes back actually about 2 years ago this month. So I'm in my early 50s, and I had this backache. I won't get graphic, but basically a couple of years ago, it turns out I had a 2-inch by 2-inch kidney stone in one of my kidneys. Just
yikes!
Oh, that's why. So when it went to the doctor with the Stanford, they said, well, fortunately, it was too big to try to pass. So they basically had surgery. I went in 2 days, a quick surgery. They went into my back and removed the kidney stone. That's as graphic as all. Everything was fine. It could not have gone better. And so I'm back home, I'm recovering, I'm off work for a month, and I was fine. I felt totally fine. I was just sitting around. And my boss at my day job, who was a real sweetheart, I was talking to her, and she actually gave me the fact, she said, I knew you'd be fine because you have little angels everywhere. Mm. She just said that, and I'm like, what a beautiful sentiment. So I wrote down little angels everywhere. And just... put my guitar in drop D and just started noodling around and wrote the song in an afternoon.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. It was a short little happy kind of gratitude song. And that one's gotten some airplay too. I played it in church. I played it in bars. I mean, it's one of those songs that just kind of works everywhere.
Yeah. Everybody can relate to that song, I think.
Yeah. I was thinking like we were talking, I forget if we were recording at that point, but you know, my wife and I had pneumonia last month. You had a bad cold. And when my wife and I were sick, we had friends that were bringing us soup literally every day for a week. And I told all my friends, this is great, but I'm not going to open the door because you don't want this bug. And so they would drop soup off on our front porch and then text me.
That's cool.
And again, every time somebody helps you out, it's like you've got a little angel everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah. And another song that I like a lot on the CD is Somewhere I Went Right. Can you tell me about the inspiration about that song?
Yeah. Oh, this is another co-write. This is a John Cirillo co-write. And this is a song written in an afternoon. So John was out from Nashville, and I said, okay, we're going to block out 4 hours and write a song. We actually did it face-to-face. We're going to block out 4 hours and write a song. And he said, okay. So we sat down for an afternoon, and he had his notebook, and I had my notebook and my phone. And it was nice because we had no idea what we were going to do. And we're really close. We trust each other. That's the thing about co-writing too. There's got to be a level of trust and comfort and all that. So we just sat and we just scrolled through lyric ideas and titles and half-written songs. And I don't even know where this came from, but probably because I was playing on the phrase in my notebook. I wrote Somewhere I Went Right, and John goes, that's good. We sat there and we just banged it out in 4 hours. It was really just back and forth and back and forth. And And John's a very disciplined writer because he writes every day with other co-writers. So I would get to a line and I go, I don't know what goes, so let's go to the next one. John goes, no. If it takes an hour, we're going to finish this line. That's the way he writes. And he writes a lot of songs and he's gotten some hits. He goes, no, if we're going to sit and finish this line, and then we'll go to the next one. I went, okay. and there was a couple of, there's a line in there where it says, 2020 hindsight, it worked out like I planned. And I came up with that. I go, that's kind of a goofy line. And John said, yeah, but it needs a little Michael Gaither in it. Some of kind of like the goofy stuff, clever stuff you did. So we'll put that in. So we ended up with the song, and it's a simple little love song. It's got an airplay, and it was really written probably in about 4 hours. And kind of a side story on that, with the song already worked, but I didn't know what I was going to do on the record. And this is an anecdote, but I think it's interesting. I was hosting a festival up near Sacramento, and a couple of years ago, the band called the Sweet Potatoes played, and the accordion player looked really familiar. And we got done, and I said, are you Laura Hall from the TV show Whose Line Is It Anyway? And she said, yeah, that's me. So we became friends. We kept in touch. They're actually playing a house concert at our house in a couple of weeks. And so for that song, that accordion, there's a beautiful accordion track on there, and that's Laura Hall playing accordion. It was gorgeous. So it really, yeah. And I had a friend of mine come in and sing, a friend of mine, she came in and sang harmony. I added some banjo to it. It really came out just a nice, pretty song.
Yeah, I like Laura. She's a lot. I met her, gosh, it's had to have been like 5 or 6 years ago now. I think it was at the Farm Conference in St. Louis.
And okay. People.
It was so cool meeting her because, like, I recognized her. I'm like, oh my God, that's Laura Hall from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah, that's me.
Because I was at one of the first taping of that show. I was in LA visiting a friend, and my friend just said, hey, I got tickets to a show. You want to go see it? And I'm like, sure, let's go. And that was Whose Line Is It Anyway? So, yeah.
And her husband.
And her husband.
Yeah.
He's from Missouri too, so that's kind of cool. His family has a farm in Missouri. So,
Yeah, nice people. Again, doing music, you write songs, then you just meet these really amazing people. It's wonderful.
Now, you're just talking about the arrangement on that song. When you talk about, I watched your video about the making of the album, and you said, you know, there's a lot of sparse instrumentation, but you use that instrumentation so well in these songs. I mean, they're not overproduced, they're not underproduced, they're just right. How do you come to that decision on what you're going to use on what song? How does that happen?
Part of it is, who do I know and what do I, honestly, who do I know and what do they play? You know, what do I think this song needs? It really is listening to the song. And this one, my last record, Starlight, was more of a full band record with drums and bass on every track. And I wanted to do, for me, kind of a bigger Americana record. Hey Karma, it was really kind of an experiment. The idea was, you know, how sparse can I make this but still make, hopefully, a record that I like and people like? So, you know, it's really kind of, I knew, like, when I met Laura Hall and she offered to play, I'm like, okay, we're going to find an accordion track. That was kind of obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's listening to the song, and especially with the last two records, I've tried to do like a lead instrument, like this one has mandolin on maybe three songs, maybe two songs. I try to make it as varied as possible. I don't want, you know, no diss to the guitar players, I don't want lead guitar in every song. I wouldn't want banjo on every song. Some people wouldn't want banjo on any song. I wouldn't want accordion on every song. I want every song to sound a little different. So I kind of look at the songs and get an idea like how I want them to be sequenced on the record, and I really kind of space out the lead instruments. Like so there's a mandolin on track maybe two, so I won't have it again until maybe track four if that fits the song. So really, varying things and spreading them out a little bit, and then kind of figuring out what lead instrument might sound good on the song.
Mm-hmm. One thing I really like that you did on one of the songs is you do slide banjo.
That was the zombie song.
Yeah, how did you come up with a idea for a slide banjo?
You know, I saw there's a guy named D.B. Reilly on the East Coast. He was a wonderful multi-instrumentalist in this festival, the American River Festival, that was hosting a showcase at for years. He played one year, and he's a really super nice guy, insanely talented. And he played, I wasn't playing banjo yet when I saw him, he played slide, and I'm like, how do you do that? He goes, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So it just stuck with me. And if you haven't played like a typical five string banjo, it's an open G, so you can you can kind of get away with a lot. So the real story on the Zombie song is Glenn McPherson and I wrote the Zombie song about moving to Boise, and Glenn wrote it. He's a great slide player. In fact, Glenn plays slide on Mixtape and on the Angels song. That's Glenn playing. So with the Zombie song, we wrote the song, and he was playing it like a standard blues song in open G with a slide. It sounded completely different when he did it, and it was great. And with me, I spent some time afterwards, you know, I play a little slide, and I was trying to, like, learn the song in open G. It was really what happened. And I just couldn't do it justice, and one day I said, no, it's kind of a weird song. My banjo's in open G. Let me see if I can make this work. So I just started, you know, farting around with the banjo and the slide, and for that song, it worked, and I just kept playing it and playing it and playing it, and it's so unusual, people really liked it.
Yeah, I think it gives the song the exact texture it needs. It's sort of a goofy kind of song, but, I mean, it needs that, you know?
Yeah, and if you haven't seen the video, it's on my site, but if you just Google Michael Gaither moving to Boise, we actually did a video for that song, and we did it kind of as a George Romero tribute, so it's black and white, with my friends and zombies and kind of circling around me playing this slide band. It's a goofy slide, and I was like, how far can we take this?
That's very cool. Yeah. One more thing I want to ask about the album is the album cover. Because we were talking about albums earlier, and album covers are such a big part of our youth. Tell me about the album cover and kind of describe it to our listeners so they get an idea of what it looks like.
The thing I love about this record is I really did go all over the place, and it seems like everything on this has a story. So with the album cover, I've always wanted to draw a character kind of drawing on the cover. And if you haven't seen the cover, it's me. It's a character of me playing my guitar, and there's like a mountain behind me and clouds. And one road sign on the left has an angel, and one road sign on the right has a little zombie on it. So it says Michael Gaither, Hey Karma, with an angel and a zombie. So it's this goofy cover. I was doing a show about a year and a half ago. A friend of mine had a release party, and so I did a set to open for her. And did it solo. It was really fun. It was at the local place called Don Quixote's up in Belton near Santa Cruz, California. And I got done, and there was a guy sitting in the front who was, you know, sketching the whole time. And if you play out enough, eventually you're going to have a show where somebody draws a character. It's happened a couple of times, and it's very flattering. It's very cool. So he drew this drawing, and he goes, here. And it was a drawing of me with the mountain, and I have a song about Highway 17. I have a song about basically cell phones, that kind of bashes cell phones that I play a lot. So he did this drawing of me on a mountain road, and one road sign had Highway 17, and one road sign had cell phones with a slash through it, like a circle, red circle with a slash through it. And I looked at it, and I went, there's my album cover. Because I really didn't have a project idea yet, and I saw this guy handing me this drawing, and then Mike Samuel, and I went, well, there's my concept. It was basically somebody handed me a drawing at a show, and that kind of drove the album concept. So I kept his card, and he redid it for me. And he's a graphics designer. He's done the logo for like Sears and Animal Planet. I mean, really talented, super nice guy. So he redid it for me with some, you know, with the angel and the zombie, and on inside the record, there's some guitars and some other like iconography that kind of, you know, is evocative of the CD. So it's black and white, black drawing, and one little sales kind of thing. If you order the record off my site, you get a Hey Karma little bracelet that has a zombie and a banjo on it. But it was a character that came out of a show.
That's very cool. That's a cool story.
Yeah.
it was sort of meant to be. It was kismet.
It was kind of like, he handed me this drawing, and I went, because we all, after a while, you do a record, a couple of years go by, and you think, well, I should probably do another one, but I don't really know. You know, you kind of want to have a concept. I always want to have a concept behind the record. Like Starlight was about my small town. This one I had just a bunch of disparate songs. He handed me this drawing, and I went, there it is. It was really, the drawing kind of drove the record. It was really kind of cool.
So now I have to make an album.
And again, just you go out and you play music, and you just meet these amazing people that just kind of cross your path. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that's the beauty about making music. So Hey Karma is your fifth CD. What year did you make your first one, and what would you say is the biggest difference between this one and your first one?
Spotted Mule and Other Tales was in 2006, and then I did one called Dog Speed in 2009. I think the first two I was just kind of learning what I was doing still. I had a bunch of songs and they, you know, I got some airplay and people liked it. I did them with a local guy who kind of played everything. I did my guitar and he kind of just, you know, redid everything. So it kind of had his sound and that was fine. It was my first couple of records and I got some things out there. And then I kind of took a break and decided when I record again, this is like a 2009 or so, but when I record again, it's really got to sound like me. And I thought about doing something solo, but I wasn't quite there with the chops yet. And I wanted it to be entertaining. And then so I did, I waited, then I did Starlight. And for Starlight, I went in with a drummer and a bass player. I knew what was going to go on each. This is where I decided, you know, this song needs mandolin, this song needs harmony, this song needs whatever. So I think, but the third record, I really went in with a plan. And the idea was that if somebody heard the record and heard me play solo, it would sound the same. Because quite often you'll hear a record and you go hear a performer and they don't really sound anything alike. So with Starlight, my third project really, if you hear the songs and you hear me playing solo, even though there's not all the lead instrumentation on top of it, it'll sound kind of the same. It really sounds like me. And then I did like a holiday EP a few years later because I had a couple of offbeat holiday songs, and that was pretty much just me and a bass player and a percussionist, and it was really sparse. And then I thought, maybe I didn't do a whole record like this. So with Hey Karma, it was the same idea. Go in, songs are ready, and just kind of keep it sparse and record my parts first and then bring people in. Hey Karma, I pretty much produced. My friend Dan Kai, who produced Starley, lives in Hawaii now, but he kind of advised and I gave him a co-producing credit because we talked about it a lot. But I was in the studio kind of making all the calls. So the last three projects really sound like me is what I'd say.
And were they all done in professional studios or did you do them in a home studio? Or
the first two were done in a home studio in Santa Cruz, where my friend, you know, added instrumentation to it himself. The last three were done. Keith Energy is a local singer-songwriter. He has a studio up in the Santa Cruz Mountains. I did my holiday EP there. The last two full CDs I did at Bear Creek Studios up in the Santa Cruz Mountains as well, behind UCSC, the university. And I did those. That's a studio with like a mixing room and a big, you know, soundproof room and a couple of side rooms. So those were like professional studios. Mm-hmm. And it made a difference. It made a difference.
Yeah. Do you feel like a bigger pressure being in a real studio to perform well, or do you feel like you can still take your time and try to figure it out?
Studios are interesting because you're paying for the time, so there's a little pressure in the back of your mind, but you're trying not to think of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a matter of finding somebody you want to work, you're comfortable working with. If you haven't recorded, the best thing I always tell people is like the people you're thinking about recording, go out and just record maybe like one or two songs in their studio and see if you're comfortable working there, mm-hmm. Whatever the dynamic is. With the last two full CDs, Keith was great. I love working with Keith. But these last two full CDs, Starlight and Hey Karma, I recorded at Bear Creek Studios with a guy named Justin Mayer. And he's mellow. He's a great singer. He sings everything. And once in a while, he can give you like a, what do you think about this? But he's just really comfortable to work with. So mm-hmm. I feel no pressure. I felt more pressure when we were recording other people because I was like, okay, I wanted to sound like this. And if it didn't, that's when I got nervous, when I was actually having other people record and maybe it wasn't going right, which really didn't happen on this. There were a couple of times where it's like, it's not really what I want. How do you tell them you want it to sound like this, but keep it all happy and friendly?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It went fine. You know, and a really good piece of recording advice is a friend of mine told me this a couple of years ago. She said, find out what the engineer likes and take it every day to the studio. So I found out Justin is the vegan and he likes kombucha. So every day when I went to the studio, I took fresh fruit. I took hummus and chips and basically make a nice, you know, keep everybody fed and happy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's relaxed and people love having food around. So that's a really good piece of advice is, you know, take some food with you to the studio and just keep everybody fed and happy.
Yeah, that's a really good piece of advice. I'll have to remember that for mm-hmm. my next
Yeah,
time.
I never would have thought of it. And my friend Sharon said, find out what he likes and take it every day. And I'm like, what a great idea.
That's cool, yeah.
And it should be, and that keeps it fun, and it should be.
Right, because music is about fun, really, having fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to ask you about the Songs and Stories podcast. Where do you record that? Do you have a studio in your home that you do that in?
You know, I normally record it around my kitchen table, literally around people people will come by. I have a little Eterol made by Roland recorder. It's several years old, but the quality is amazing. The room's got some nice reverb. I record it around the kitchen table, and we'll talk for 20 minutes, sometimes longer, depending who it is, pretty loose. They'll play a song or two, and then after the fact, here in my home office, I'll use GarageBand or Logic Pro, and I'll cut it together with some commentary.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, it's recorded here at home. But I like to do remote. If I go to a festival, I'll usually get a hold of somebody ahead of time and we'll record wherever. So quite often, if you've heard some of the remote recordings, you're going to hear background noise because we're at a festival, we're outdoors somewhere, but I think it kind of gives it some character too, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes if people are playing locally, they just don't have time to come by the house. I've gone to a local radio station and recorded like one of the offices or at a venue in the back room, which is noisy, but, you know, if somebody's in town who's kind of a name and I can get 20 minutes with them, I'll go to wherever they're at so we can get the interview.
You started this 10 years ago, right? You started the podcast?
Yeah, it's 10 years this month.
Wow. So why did you decide to do a podcast? Was it your journalism that kind of kicked in and you wanted to get back to that?
It's exactly what it was. It was... I wasn't writing for the Sentinel anymore. I just started, you know, michaelgaither.com, the website. There was a blog page. And part of it was my last few projects at the Sentinel, I was interviewing musicians and I really liked it. And I thought with the website, you know, I liked the idea of promoting other artists and that way the site wouldn't be just about me. So I interviewed a couple of friends so I wasn't nervous. And then I learned how to do a podcast and I thought, well, this is kind of fun. So it was absolutely an offshoot of doing interviews and journalism.
And so who's your favorite interview that you've done?
God, I'm going to slight somebody. You know what? I usually always say the latest interview is my favorite, but if I could cite a couple, Gerf Morlix. I'm a big fan of Gerf Morlix. He's an Austin producer, band leader for years. He was part of Warren Zevon's band for a while. Mm-hmm. He's produced Leigh Cleaves and Robert Keane and Mary Gaucher. And a few years ago, he played locally, and I had an interview set up, and he ended up, like, staying at our place. And so after the show, he came back. We had a beer. We interviewed him. And then he's done it two more times. He played a house concert at our place last year. Just a treasure. I think just criminally underrated songwriter. He's just a phenomenal songwriter. Gerf comes to mind. Locally, I think Keith Benich has been on the show a few times. Ancy McLean with the Trailer Park Troubadours has been on the show a few times. And, you know, I've done about 200 episodes, so a lot of these. This was back a ways, but one of my favorite interviews because it was a field recording. I was at the Strawberry Music Festival probably 9 years ago, 8 years ago. The Waylon Jennings were playing, the trio from Canada, and I set up an interview. We were going to talk kind of backstage, and they got called on stage to do a song with the Bills, and so it got really late, but they found me, and they wanted to do the interview, so while the headline band was playing, we walked to my friend's campsite, found the lantern, and we interviewed like in a campsite with all this festival noise around us, but if you listen to the interview, it was as we were walking towards the campsite trying to find it, they started just kind of singing some song and goofing around, so I turned the recorder on.
Mm-hmm.
So I caught walking through the bushes and then singing and us finding the lantern and stumbling through it. It was just like in the moment, and I just thought it was a really, really cool thing to listen to.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I like them. They have some great harmonies and great songs.
Yeah, and the new record has a nice cover of Wildflowers, if you haven't listened
oh, really?
To that yet.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a good Tom Petty song.
Yeah.
So what do you have planned for 2018?
Well, now that I'm not sick, I'm booking gigs, which is nice. You know, I'm actually putting a band together. I haven't had a band. I've been doing the solo thing for a long time, and there's a local festival called Days of Wine and Wet Noses in April. That's kind of a big benefit for the local animal shelter, and you know, KPIG Radio locally kind of helps sponsor it. And I've been kind of itching to put a band together for some. As a solo player, there's places I can't play solo just because an outdoor festival or maybe a bar, it just doesn't work as a solo player. And I thought, I've been kind of jonesing to put a band together, so I'm doing that, and my friend who's putting on the Days of Wine and What Knows, says, well, if you get a band together, I'll give you the first slot at this festival. And I said, all right. So I did. So I'm working on that. I got a guitar player and a bass player and a harmony singer lined up, so we got a song list and I haven't really done a band thing in a long time. And for this festival in particular, they want it to be a mostly Tom Petty day. So mm-hmm. I'm learning a lot of Tom Petty songs. So it's really going to be fun. So there's that. And just kind of looking for the usual solo winery things I do. And then have some more songs I'm trying to finish. I'm going back to the songwriting retreat in Idaho in May, so I'll probably have a solid week to at least finish up a couple of things there.
Some more.
And I got a bunch of podcast interviews queued up as well.
Good. Some more writing.
Guys, so.
Some more writing, yeah. and performing then.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, my next podcast, I'm doing a local guy next week, but then in a couple of weeks, we talked about Laura Hall. The Sweet Potatoes are playing at our house. So they're going to spend the night, and we're going to do a podcast the next day to be able to hear a Sweet Potatoes interview on KC Cafe Radio probably within a month or so.
Awesome. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Laura Hall and Rich both. So I want to just thank you for chatting with me today and let everybody
Absolutely.
Know that they can find you at michaelgaither.com. That's spelled GAITHER.com. They can find your CD there. If you purchase it through the website, you get a free bracelet. But it's also available at the normal places like CD Baby and Amazon mm-hmm. and iTunes. Check out the website, and because you have some neat videos there. Is your video for your zombie song on YouTube, or where do people find that?
It's on YouTube. It's also on the video page on my site. But if you Google just move into Boise, you'll come across it.
Great. So michaelgaither.com. Go check out the website. And I think you can probably friend him on Facebook. Any other
Absolutely.
Of the social medias are you on? Like Twitter or anything?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram, so you can find me there as well.
All right, great. Check out Michael Gaither at michaelgaither.com, and I thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, and thank you for doing Songs and Stories podcast. That's a wonderful thing we look forward to each week on KC Cafe Radio as well.
Thank you for all the support. Really appreciate it.